there, weary traveler. Welcome to the inn. Sit, sit, rest your feet. Why, it's a long journey on the road to Tarvalon. Have a cup of tea, or maybe a frothy ale. The light, why, you're just in time for the entertainment. Here are your hosts, Tracy and Amber.
He was not sure whether others heard and passed the order, or the mountainous weight of Trolloc simply pressed in, but slowly, one grudging step at a time, the humans moved back. Loyal swung his bloodied axe like Mallet's wide mouth snarling. Besides the Ogier, Bran thrust his spear grimly. He had lost his steel cap and blood ran from the fringe of his gray hair. From his stallion, Tomas carved space around Varen. Hair in wild disarray, she had lost her horse. Balls of fire streaked from her hand and every Trolloc struck, exploded in flames as if soaked in oil. Perrin, chapter 56, The Shadow Rising. Holy crap!
Holy crap!
Hello and welcome back. I'm here with my good friend Tracy.
I'm here with my delightful friend Amber.
And this is the road to Tarvalon. Today, oof, the battle of Emmons Field, the aftermath of the fight within the Panarch's palace, Ruidion, everything's going down in the waste. And this book comes to an end.
I can't.
Words.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, but I can't quite believe that we're here already. Like, didn't we just start this book? Didn't we just start it?
It's wild to think how long this book is and right? How quickly the climax comes in these last, I would say, 5-6 chapters.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it's enough. It feels like this should have been drawn out into maybe, I would go with like 10 chapters.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we had a similar observation for the deposing of Swan chapter. Like, boom, everything right there, one chapter. So many things we didn't get to see, so many things we just heard of, like kind of secondhand or through exposition. Like, I could have had so much more of that and been really happy. And I feel the same way here. And I think this is why sometimes I'm like, I don't remember how that happened. And it's because it's like, bam, all of it right here. And if you don't catch it, it can be kind of confusing.
Yeah. And I think, too, the main reason is because this book in particular has one of, or maybe a handful of fan favorite moments where a lot of people think that this is the best book. Maybe it's their favorite because we have a lot of these really grand conclusions to the plot line with Rand and the Waste, the plot line with Nynaeve and Elaine and Tan Chico, and then the Battle of Emmons Field. And so often the end of these books is like, oh, we're going to fight another Forsaken. And that's the end, you know, like Rand versus so-and-so. And honestly, I like this Perrin chapter, this Two Rivers chapter a lot.
Yeah. A lot.
And the Nynaeve one is really good too. So we're kind of like splitting up these awesome moments, and it could have been, I don't know, it could have been a little longer.
Yeah. And you know, I'm kind of thinking about that too. Like, in some ways, this battle for Emmons Field has been happening for chapters. You know, like, this is just the ultimate moment of what's happening. But it does feel kind of abrupt still, you know?
Yeah, I could have dedicated a whole chapter to everything that's happening within this battle. Like, it would have been great to see a Loyal point of view, or great to see a Gaul point of view, or great to see a Varen point of view.
Oof. Gimme.
Even the Tinkers, even Isla, that would have been cool. So,
ooh,
I mean,
yeah. Ooh.
But that also goes along with, I think, the chaos of battle. You're just seeing it through Perrin's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of like focusing on one thing, and it's for 10 seconds he sees this, and then, mm-hmm. you know, 3 seconds over there he mm-hmm. notices this. And I guess that is realistic. Mm-hmm. I mean, so often reading the Origins book where Robert Jordan is described as kind of like these moments in battle where mm-hmm. he's been in wars and stuff, and how it's just you get in the zone and you mm-hmm. kind of just, you're not really aware of anything, but aware yeah. of everything all mm-hmm. at the same time. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Yeah. I definitely think about that much more since learning more about his military background and how it's a perspective of someone who's actually lived through moments similar to this, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. I just realized that we haven't started with any particular chapter.
No, we have not.
This is how excited we are. That's what it is. Do you want me to kick us off with our first chapter summary for the episode?
Let's do it. Yeah.
Awesome. So chapter 55, Into the Deep. Nynaeve, Elaine, and Aginan got into the Panarch's palace, but now it's time for the trio plus one to find their way out. The hoped-for riots have done their bloody job, and all make a safe return to the inn where, once again, plans need to be made.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah.
What a fun moment we have. Nynaeve racing out of the Panarch's palace, just fueled by her worry for mm-hmm. Elaine. And, you know, I can't think of anyone better to have my back. The Nynaeve, right? Almira.
No, she will not stop at anything to no. protect, defend. Wow. I do, like, when she is walking through the palace on her way to the meeting point with Elaine, and she loses her anger. And so she's not, I mean, she's too tired to really want to channel anyway, but she really can't at that moment. And then she sees Leandrin and who's the other?
Rihanna?
Yeah, Leandrin and Rihanna are the two mm-hmm. black sisters that are just like using Weaves of Air to like push people out of their way. And she was like, had I been channeling?
Right, right. And it was mm-hmm. actually her fear of what's happening mm-hmm. to Elaine mm-hmm. that makes Sidar fade within her, because she's focused on Elaine mm-hmm. now, and she's not mad.
Yeah.
She's worried.
She's worried. So yeah. So getting to Elaine, of course, is like the utmost importance for her right now. And she has the things that they came for. So that is like, hooray! You know, things are going more or less well.
Yeah.
When she does get to Elaine, I want to say,
are you about to say how cute Elaine is when Nynaeve is like, how did you deal with Amythera? And Elaine's yeah. like, oh, I took care of it.
I had a little talk with her.
She's Aginan, so cute.
Stop moving your face. Stop that. You're giving me away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Elaine in general is just delightful to read.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the moment, too, where Elaine tells Nynaeve that basically short of, you know, binding Aginan down,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Aginan was dead set on going to find Nynaeve and making sure that Nynaeve was okay. And yep. then we have this moment of Nynaeve touching Aginan's shoulder and thanking her, which is, this is a big move for
it is.
Nynaeve. The woman can hold a grudge like no other, but mm-hmm. that starts yeah. to kind of crack for her. And then she's like, oh, by the way, yes. Gideon found me, but don't worry about it.
Yes. Okay, I was gonna say, this is another big Nynaeve moment, because she is not just saying that she caught a Forsaken. Like, that just is almost like, yeah, 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 that part happened. However, I was the one that said, let's be careful. And then I was the one who fucked up. And she doesn't like it. Like, I love how, the way that this is written, taking a deep breath, Nynaeve made her voice apologetic. She hated doing that. And she does it anyway. So we have like two kind of growth moments cracking open further for Nynaeve in these chapters. And it's, I don't know, it's one of those things that's like, yes, she's such a fun character to read. She's not the same character from beginning to end.
Yeah. I think with this whole chapter, like them scurrying out, and I adore how Bail Domain's men have created this bubble around them. And something just, I can see it so perfectly in my head. Like, I can see this moment in the television show if they were to give it to us.
Mm-hmm.
I could plan it all out. Like, I can totally see it. These gruff men, maybe some tattoos, and just, you know, dirty, greasy fingernails. They've been working on the docks, and they're all kind of gruff, and they're just holding the line, and I love it.
Probably barefoot.
yeah, it's muddy.
Mm-hmm.
I can see it.
Yeah, I hadn't really visually pictured the number of sailors that are there, like, for this defensive ring that's going to form around the women leaving from the Panarch's palace. But I think, doesn't Nynaeve estimate it, like, 300 of them?
I don't remember that number, but if that is what it is, what an awesome sight that would make.
Exactly.
You know, like, I was just thinking it has to be at least between like 50 and 60 at the very least for them to be able to make a wall around the women. But if there's even more than that, then we're talking about a much bigger riot, and that makes it even cooler.
Yeah, I actually just found it. Bail Domain's sailors, at least 300 of them, formed a semicircle too deep about the door. Like,
That's so cool.
Right?
It's so cool.
Right? Like, just waiting for them. Just holding. And I mean, the scene that's described as they, like, look out the door is, like, this milling, violent mass of people. Like, white cloaks are being taken out of the saddles of their horses and, like, dragged away by the crowd. Like, this is...
Love to see it. You love to see a white cloak getting dragged.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, like, the fact that it takes that number of people to get them safely away from the riot that they started. Like, this is their fault. And Nynaeve knows it, and she is definitely, like, conflicted about it. But, I mean, everything was there for it. It's not like they had created the political instability.
Right.
Yeah, political instability. Like, that's not on them. They just, like, used the tools. Pen. Yeah. Like, use what you got.
Yeah.
It definitely speaks to where the city is, where the structure of government is, and what is potentially going. I like Domain this whole time is like, it's gonna be Falma all over again. Yeah. Or maybe slightly worse. I mean, Falma is a little kind of town on the coast. This is like the seat of power for one of the nations in the Westlands. And it's crumbling.
So how did you feel about Elaine's justice to Amathera? Are you a fan?
I'm a fan.
Did you live?
Yes and no. Yes, because it seems as though it's necessary if Amathera is ever going to rule over her people to get this glimpse into quote-unquote real life, especially as Elaine's pointing out like the amount of food that's in her palace and whatnot. But no, because this woman has been held captive for who knows how long. And, I mean, not very long. A matter of days, I would assume. Like, the Black Aja weren't in the palace for very long, right?
I don't think so, but it's hard to tell with the way that these chapters are written. It's not like,
oh, yeah,
3 months later,
you know? Yeah, no, that's a good point. Like, the only time passage that I can think of is, like, the 7 visits from Meginen. Like, that's, I'm like, okay, that's not really an amount of time, but okay.
Right.
But she has been held captive. She has been tortured. She has been abused. And, I mean, maybe a little sympathy isn't out of the question. I don't know.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
I feel bad for Amathera because nobody deserves to be force-fed ice peppers.
Right.
Like that.
Sing raunchy songs like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, this entire city is just falling apart. People are starving. Mm-hmm. And that's why these riots are happening.
Yeah.
These people are destitute and there is nothing to eat. Mm-hmm. And this couldn't have just happened within 2 weeks, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, she's bringing what she learned. Okay, I'm not going to say just what she learned in the White Tower, because I think that she probably would have done the same thing without her Aes Sedai training. Mm-hmm. But I think she's felt humbled in the past by the things that she had to do in the White Tower, these menial jobs. And she's like, if I can do it, the daughter heir, she can do it.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point. That's a good point. It certainly doesn't necessarily seem like the worst thing to do.
And it's a good disguise.
That was the other thing that I was thinking of, is like, no one's going to look for her serving tables or cleaning pots and pans in the kitchen of the inn. You know, like, they'll look for her in places among people of power still, would be my assumption, but not there.
Yeah. Even Tom has a reaction with this, you know, like, you'll make a fine queen someday, Elaine of House Andor, and my heart.
Yes.
She will make a fine queen.
Yes. I was actually thinking about that when we were, like, at the beginning of the chapter talking about her talk with Amathera and how, like, Tom later on is, at this point, it's like, you'll be a fine queen. And she's like, yay, thanks, Tom.
Yeah, and then she immediately, as soon as she says that, she notices that Tom's bleeding and she immediately goes to check his wounds and clean his face. And it's, I don't know, like, there's something about, I'm getting like big Bible moments, like Mary Magdalene cleaning Jesus's feet, where like she's the daughter heir, she's gonna be the queen, and here she is, like, soothing this man who's bleeding, this older man, and taking care of him. And it's just I love her.
Yeah.
She's a good one. She's a real one, that Elaine.
Yeah, you know what?
Chiconed.
Yeah, perfectly said. Thank you. Yeah, yeah. Accurate. She does feel real. I like that about her.
Yeah, so I think they've made plans with Amathera. Nynaeve needs, she decides these items, the seal and the, what looks like, like handcuffs, cuffs,
collared
mail
bracelets.
Item.
Yeah.
Julin is like, we gotta take, are you gonna take these back to the tower? And Nynaeve is like, the seal maybe, but this, like these bracelets, like Bail Domain, do you know the deepest part of the ocean?
Yeah.
Bail Domain's like, I think I do.
Yeah.
And. Yeah. Now we know where that's going.
She feels, and I think she's probably right, that if the bracelets and the collar end up in the tower, there's every chance that someone will
Black
get their
Aja.
Hands on it. Exactly. Like, they know the Black Aja exists. It's not a question. And no reason to think that they aren't still kicking it in the tower. So, I mean, even if you aren't a dark friend and you're worried about the future of humanity, wouldn't you be at least a little bit tempted to maybe try those? Elida sure would.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point. And it's, I mean, obviously, it's so scary to think of Elaine and Nynaeve showing back up at the tower anyways. Like, what is waiting there is not good. It is not good.
No. Wow, yeah, that's all coming next book too, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that the ending of this chapter is her thinking about her fighting Mogideon and realizing how close she was to losing her life.
Mm-hmm.
Her thoughts go to Lan Mandragoran, and she's
thinking, of course they do.
If Eginan and Bail Domen can get mm-hmm. along after what they went through, then maybe the situation between her, Lan, and Moraine could be okay.
Yeah. I agree. Life feels a little different when you've encountered something that monumental.
Right? I mean, she almost got her head taken off with Balefire.
Mm-hmm.
That was close.
It was close. She was almost guaranteed death. Like, mm-hmm. if you were just looking at it, like, going against a Forsaken, then having this, like, wild Balefire blasting around her while she's just wrapped up with a Forsaken. Like, the fact mm-hmm. that she made it out of that alive is incredible. And wanting to cling to something, to someone you love, and make sure that they know it and you get your time with them probably feels really pressing.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that builds on what we were saying last week with our chapter with Karen and the wedding,
mm-hmm.
because when the world is going to shit
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of bad and mad and sad out there,
yeah,
you cling to the things that make you happy and the people that make you happy. And
absolutely.
That's what she's doing, even mm-hmm. though Lan drives her absolutely mad.
And he's nowhere nearby.
No.
Like, this will be a very potentially long process to get to Lan.
Yeah. But I think that's it for that chapter.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh. And here comes the battle.
Golden Eyes.
Parent Golden Eyes. All right. So, chapter 56, Golden Eyes. Perrin is preparing his mind and the village for what will certainly be the worst attack, if not the last, on Emmons Field. There is little hope of keeping the Trollocs from overrunning the village, and the battle is not going in their favor when welcome news arrives that they are no longer fighting alone.
Yeah. So, with the start of this chapter, we have Perrin writing his letter to Faile.
Uh-huh.
And What a beautiful letter that was. Like, Perrin, you're wordsmith. Right.
And he's like, I have no words for you. These will have to do. And I'm like, oh, my eyes.
Right?
I'm not crying. You're crying.
Marcus Rutherford, get ready. You're about to have.
Right?
Women don't know. They don't know yet. You're about to be a sex symbol for
ooh, dang
many ladies.
I have a feeling you
I mean
be.
If this letter is included,
right? Yeah, I mean, that could happen regardless, but you know, this would just be like added to it for sure. It's so sweet.
I mean, that could be the beginning of their relationship, where he aww. Sends her off and he, you know, like, he's thinking, like, he's going to die, and that thought of him dying is like, I have to tell her.
Oh, That would be good.
When the sun shines on you, yes! It is my smile. When you hear the breeze stir
no.
through the apple blossoms, it is my whisper that I love you. Oh, Perrin.
Okay. So we shouldn't spend like all our time on this letter, but Perrin, way to go, man. Way to go.
This whole chapter is so hard. So the thing that just like breaks me is Daes explaining what the plan mm-hmm. is with the women and mm-hmm. the children mm-hmm. and the tinkers. And mm-hmm. I'm like I get choked up mm-hmm. at this every time. And on top of that, so does Perrin.
Right. Like, he's trying to thank them. And they're all like, mm-hmm. oh, Perrin, go do your mm-hmm. thing. We've got this.
It's the women's circle. They do got it. Indeed. Mm. In fact, they do.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Right?
Oh, my right? God. Marin Alvear?
Oh, my God. What a moment. You can explain for everyone. I didn't mean to jump in and cut you off.
No, because, I mean, seriously, like, that doesn't happen until, like, as the battle is, like, raging. But the women have to come in and end up standing, like, shoulder to shoulder. And the line where it says, but Marin Alvear calmly hamstrung it with one blow of her cleaver. The leg gave way, and she just as coolly severed the Trolloc's spine at the base of its neck.
You know, working in the wine spring, she's been chopping onions and deboning meat. She was born for this.
She knows all about severing at spines and whatnot. Like,
oh, so cool.
So good. Like,
let's, just, yeah.
We can back up. But I mean, yeah. I had Marin Alvear. Fist shaking happiness. I mean, not that they have to fight and whatnot, but that they just do it in such a way. There's no doubt in what they do. This is what has to be done. And they just fucking do it. Oh, okay.
So we do have some interaction with the Dirty Weasel Boys, is of what course I call we do. The White Cloaks.
It's my favorite and title for them.
Perrin makes a deal. If they help fight, he'll turn himself in. Mm-hmm. The men are not happy about it, but Bornhold is all like, like, okay, cool. Sneer. Yeah. Sneer.
Yeah.
But moving away from the White Cloaks, unless there was something that you wanted to build
no,
upon
I was,
that.
I was just going to say, they were going to leave. Like, they were going to leave knowing that there was this, like, deadly attack on these villagers. They were just going to leave. And Perrin's like, you dirty dogs. How can you? And so he gives up himself to save the village again. You know, like, this is his card. This is what he can play to have, like, hundreds of well-trained, armed soldiers on horses. Like, that in and of itself is incredibly helpful in an attack like this. And they're like, no, you orchestrated all of this. Like, we're not going to be here to watch you let the Trolloc slaughter everyone here. We're leaving. I'm like, God. Mm-hmm. Ugh. How I feel about the White Cloaks.
And his men, like his people, I shouldn't say his men, his people are really pissed. Like, they're not okay with this. But what can they do? Perrin's their de facto leader now. And then we have Perrin moving off to check his defenses. And of course, like, love a plan, love a good plan, pony. So. As he's walking, he's embarrassed because people are cheering for him everywhere he goes, which, for one, adorable. But what I love about this is we get this bird's eye view of everything that's happening defense-wise. So Abel Cawthon is in charge of the Westwood side, and he tells Perrin they're not going to find the Two Rivers easy meet. And I'm like, yeah, they're not. And then Tamal Thor is on the south side, and he's getting the men ready with the archers. Like, ready, that's his deal. And then we have the warders and the Aes Sedai, and Alana's doing her thing with the catapults. And Perrin goes to the north, which is the same direction that Fael had left in. What a coinky dink.
Crazy choices. Crazy.
Yeah. But he's thinking, like, well, you know, it's a good place to die, I guess. And Loyal is there with his massive wood axes, and Gaul and Chiad, who are standing side by side. And
love it. Love it.
It's just everybody's more or less ready for what this day is about to become.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the Trollocs show up, right?
Yes. Yes, they're shouting Esom.
Yeah.
My parents like, that's weird.
All right, then.
And I'm like, that's weird. And Varen's like, that's interesting. Right. And Varen's like, what? And she's like, what? Nothing to see here. I don't know anything.
Yeah, I totally marked that out where he was like, that is not the word I would use. But all right. Varen, you weirdo. I mean, she's the same woman who was like, oh, look at this madrawal staked to a door. How interesting. Where's my notebook?
Right.
Doesn't she say, like, and she says something. Yeah, she says something to Perrin when he comes over because, like, she's stationed up in the north where he chooses to fight, too. And she's like, if I could split myself into three people, I would tie a string to you, Rand, and Matt. Like, all right, Varen.
All right, Varen, we can arrange that. Just talk to some Myrdral, you know?
They might be helpful. Yeah. So the Trollocs come through.
We get this, you know, cacophony of battle, right? Everything's mm-hmm. happening, and mm-hmm. he's noticing that the Trollocs are just pressing in mm-hmm. slowly, grudgingly, one step at a time, and the humans are being pushed. Well, I shouldn't say humans. Loyal's there, but...
Right. That's okay.
They're being pushed
the
back.
The humans plus Loyal.
Yes. Yes. And I just... I love this part so much where we are getting this desperate mm-hmm. look at things just going very badly, very, mm-hmm. very badly, but everyone's still fighting as hard as they can. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we have, this like, was... that first, like, defense of the bows and the catapults, and then they get... Like, it doesn't matter how many of them go down. It just seems like there's always more in their place. And so mm-hmm. they, like, hit the line with the stakes, and that doesn't seem to really deter them all that much either. And then they're fighting among the houses. Like, mm-hmm. it's desperate. It is a legitimate fight for their lives.
Yeah, so this circle that they've pretty much... enclosed the two rivers with, or Emmons Field, the men that are on the east and west side start closing in and bending around, like swinging around, because the line is being bowed backwards. Mm-hmm. So from the north. So the north side is like dipping closer and closer, further into the town. Mm-hmm. So the other men on the outside have like squished inward to help mm-hmm. like buffer that, which yeah. means that their lines on the side are going to become easy to penetrate.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not good for anyone. Mm-mm. As soon as that breaks, as soon as the line breaks anywhere, everything's mm-hmm. done. It's over. House is gone. Everything done. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll just be able to run amok. Basically, like, the defenses will be done. It'll just mm-hmm. be done. Yeah. So at all costs, that, like, needs to be avoided, but it does not look as though it's going to be able to be. And isn't that, like, when we start seeing the women show up?
Yeah, I think there's a couple. I mean, obviously, there's a few things that happen. Like, Perrin gets attacked. He gets knocked off of his horse. He's yeah. almost crushed. He thinks his leg is broken.
Yeah.
That's when he sees the women have joined the line. But he's also like, it's so hazy and it's going so fast. Like, the white cloaks are nowhere to be found.
Yep.
But the women are there. And yep. then he, you know, grabs some little boy out of the battle zone. And this little kid is like shouting, like, please listen, Master mm-hmm. Althor says someone's attacking the Trollocs. So mm-hmm. it's okay. But now I'm going too far because of the women.
yeah, like, we have Daze Conger coming in, pitchfork taking out goats, not a Trolloc.
And it's not just a regular pitchfork either. It is a pitchfork attached to a longer pole.
Right.
So, like, she's got reach, this woman.
Yeah.
And you have to have strong arms to be able to hold something that long.
Yeah.
God, I love that woman.
And still have force behind it.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So good. And then, of course, the thing with Marin Alvear just, like, calm.
Severing.
Yeah.
The spinal cord of a Trolloc.
Yeah.
Loved it.
The way that she's described as being calm and cool as she's doing it. Just like, yes, of course you are. And even little Bode Coffin.
The Coffin girls went ham. Love to see it. Love
right.
to see it.
You're not taking my sister, Trolloc. If anybody's going to beat her up, it's going to be me. Yeah, like just the way that like the women get this, even though like for Perrin, this is terrifying. Like if the women are there, where are the children? And again, where are the children of the light? While we're at it, where are they? But yeah, then we get that little kid who's like, something's happening, Lord Perrin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And oh my gosh, you know what broke me? Like I cried when he's, first off, he's horrified that this little boy has run into the battle. Mm-hmm. So like that hits hard. But after he's like, what are you doing? Get out of here. And like gets him somewhat out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
He says like, you did well, and sends him back to the other children. And I'm like, oh my God, like him being like, you did well. I'm like, ugh.
And it's his cousin.
Yeah.
It's a little Ibarra who's come to tell him the news. And I mean, seriously, did you want me to like just weep my heart out? Come on. Come on.
Especially because Perrin thinks that every single one of his relatives is
dead.
But they're not. There's one left.
Yeah. Oh. There's a little Ibarra there. Like, oh, my heart. Oh, it's just so good. It's just so good.
The other thing that really like gets me is that the Tuathaon have joined in on taking care of the children while the women of Emmons Field join the battle. And it's just like, ugh. Like if anything would have been different, if anything happened differently previous to this, the Tuathaon wouldn't have been there.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like, it all, you know, Tavirin, it all works out, but it's just, ugh, what a moment. And then Devon Ride.
Yeah, it all works out. Like you said, here we have reinforcements, if you will. Completely unexpected. Completely welcome. Oh, my God. Reinforcements. We might survive.
Can you imagine? I will lose my shit. If the TV show does this, just hearing the words like people yelling in the background, Devon Ride.
Right?
I'll die.
Same. Yeah.
You'll have to resuscitate me. This is so much more than Winter Night. It is just,
oh my God.
It's a whole different story. And I love it.
And I mean, it's actually really good that you bring up Winter Night. Like, this is not, even when it first started, like these Trolloc attacks before Perrin even got there, this is not the first time they've been under attack by Trollocs. And I mean, they're Two Rivers folk. They are way fed the fuck up with this shit. And so when Fael shows up and is like, follow me. They're like, you know what? Yeah. We're going to do
that. And how cool is it that Bane is at her stirrup?
Yee!
Like, it's so cool.
I'm like, there are so many points where I just kind of have to, like, set my book down so I can, like, lift my fists in the air and be like, yes! Still. I still
feel
that.
Can you imagine, like, what it would have been like to see this from Fael's point of view, where she's writing in and like Bane just like taking Trollocs out left and right while Fael like guides the horse and
with her knees.
I just
she's so cool in this chapter.
And I mean, there have been, I'm sure you've seen this somewhere, but someone has taken photos of them rebuilding the Emmonsfield sets. So, like, we're going back to the Two Rivers in season three. Fuck so,
yes. I knew they would have to. I mean, in my opinion,
I think I would quit. I give up.
You completely take out that entire storyline. Like, I would be like, no, guys, come on. Some things I'm okay with you sacrificing. This moment, no. No.
They rebuild it, and then they end season three on the cliffhanger of the battle.
Ooh.
And don't show it.
Yeah.
Could you imagine?
I mean. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not. I apologize for putting that out into the universe.
No, it was a joke. It was a joke. I do. I'm excited to hear that. Since our TV show release has come out, a lot of, like, how I see things in my head has changed. And part of it has also been putting the Alvears, as they're done in the show, like, in my head, in almost in a way to, like, prepare for seeing them actually go through this. Like, it's kind of fun. Like, we have a face for Daze Conger, and I kind of love her.
Oh, and it's just, now I see, like, TV show Daze every time.
Yes. Can't help it. I mean, it does actually align fairly well with the way that I had always seen her in my head anyway. Like, maybe a little cuter and a little less rough, and that's all right. She still has this, like, I don't know, kind of gruff, charming, I got this shit, persona, and I think it's done well in the show, and now I just see her in the book when I'm reading it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have Perrin's reaction of seeing Faile, which he's, you know, he's trying not to bawl his eyes out.
Right? Oh, my God. I was.
And as he's watching her, it's pretty much ending the battle. The people from Devon Ride have came in and from the outside. And at this point, I think people are just going around and picking off the last dying Trollocs.
Yeah.
And his little cousin. Oh, this again, like. This got me.
I'm with you.
The little boy is like, wait till I tell Had Lord Perrin called me cousin.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh God, kill me. I can't handle this.
Right. Like,
it's too much.
And then later on when he's like having that little thought about like how much he loves Faile and everything, and just, you know, she doesn't make any sense and he loves her and he's like, no, cousin Jame, you'll never understand them, blah blah blah, and I'm just like, why
that was not needed.
It wasn't needed, but I still liked the connection.
Girls
back
are
to
icky. Oh God,
I mean, right, of course. However, the connection back to the little kid again just made me kind of like smile, and I liked it.
Yeah, I don't know. It wasn't for me.
Totally fine. But I do, like, Faile is nervous about seeing Perrin. And, of course, he's kind of, like, sniffed this out once he gets, like, close enough to her. And she's kind of, like, worried that he's going to be upset that she didn't actually leave, that she, like, came back after leaving.
Yeah. Let's get back to those.
Yeah.
Folks.
Yeah. Down.
So Bornhold is like being nasty as per usual. Faile is like very confused as to what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And we pretty much get the confrontation where they're like, come on, you're coming with us.
Yeah.
And Perrin's like, where were you? You didn't keep your word. You were doing nothing while mm-hmm. all of our people were dying. You, the men on horseback. And they've drawn a crowd at this point mm-hmm. because Perrin has led his people to this great victory that mm-hmm. against all odds. And let's be real here. The people of Emmonsfield are not going to give Perrin up. They just got done fighting for their lives. They are adrenaline fueled.
Yeah.
They're not having it.
Yeah.
And even Daze Conger, you know, jumps in and she's like, oh yeah, I saw you prettiest girls all lined up for a Sunday dance. You never moved. That's why we had to jump in the women's circle. Like, I just see braids being tugged furiously, right? And
cleavers on shoulders.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, good luck, guys. Good luck.
Yeah. Felix says nothing. They'd skin the white cloaks before they let him let them take Perrin, and that is so true.
Agreed.
So Bornhold is just getting snarly as per usual.
Yeah. It's his normal face. He has resting snarl face. Yeah. Yeah.
But Bornhold, he's like, I will see you hang. Mm-hmm. And he like stands up on his horse, I think, to yell the last words. And the White Cloaks get ready to draw their swords, and they all freeze when they see that the Two Rivers folk have raised all of their bows. Mm-hmm. So, like, now they are completely surrounded by some of the best archers in the world.
Right.
And their arrow, like, knocked arrows, they're ready to release. And
yeah.
Perrin's like, okay, like, calm down, you know, mm-hmm. like, it's fine. Because obviously, you know, sometimes I just wish they woulda, you know?
Like, yeah. We could have
dealt with this plot line so quick, just done. Get rid of them all.
Yeah, like, I was thinking, I was like, gosh, at that range.
But Perrin's too moral for that. Their accuracy level is
like 100%. And their armor piercing, like, arrowheads, I'm assuming, like, especially with the power of a longbow behind it, like, there's no way they wouldn't slaughter those White Cloaks before they even had their swords out. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, that would have been so cool. Sorry, the mass slaughter of White Cloaks apparently gets, like, a 2 thumbs up from me.
Really gets you going.
Just the way that it would be done. Like, if it were done like that, just like, pew, 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 all those... Pew, pew, pew is a laser sound, Tracy. This is how good I am. This is how good I am at sound effects. But you know, like, that sound of arrows from bows and just, God, they just wouldn't stand a chance. They wouldn't stand a chance.
No.
And no. I think, and Bornhold knows it. Bornhold knows it. Like,
well, they've been watching this battle. They should know pretty well that the people of Two Rivers don't play, so.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about the fact that it's not just this battle that they've watched, but, like, several since they've been brought into Emmons Field in exchange for them to help with, like, fighting and whatnot and protection. And the White Cloaks just haven't held up to, like, their end of the bargain ever.
No.
Ever.
Before we move on from that, there was something that I wanted to say earlier, but I didn't think we had enough time, so I'm going to say it now.
Yay! Okay.
But when Tam was leading the archers,
yeah,
I loved something that happened here, and it's something that drives me kind of bananas when I see in TV shows.
Yeah.
Where the line of archers all shoot at the same time, and it's like, knock, draw, loose, or whatever, you know, like, they do mm-hmm. it step by step and everyone shoots at the same time in mm-hmm. like a volley. Mm-hmm. That's not real. That doesn't happen.
because
all like archers, a lot of the times, like, they wouldn't be all military trained, so you would have people that aren't so, like, okay, for example, someone like Tam Al-Thor. He's been doing this for a long time. He's mm-hmm. really good at it. Mm-hmm. But let's say you have a 13-year-old boy on the side who's not as strong. There's no way that they can keep the same consistency over and over again. So you would just shoot whenever you can draw, like, whenever you're ready. Because if you line it all up, then some people are waiting instead of, like, going as fast as they can and killing as many as they can. They would be held back by waiting for other people, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it does, actually.
like, especially putting into perspective of, like, different strength capabilities.
And, maybe, and I'm sure Felix is arguing with me in chat. I'm sure with lines of military men, they would do that to compensate for the differences, but we're not talking about a trained militia here. These are farmers.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, because I was like, how? But I do think about it as, like, from a trained military perspective, where you are trained archers who have practiced together countless times instead of a group of farmers coming together and doing the best they can, given the circumstances.
Right, right. And a lot of these, as Perrin points out, some of these boys are, you know, 13, 14 years old.
Yeah.
So
I think if you gave it to, like, show different ways of how battles unfold, like, if later on we have, like, groups of armies that have a trained archery group.
Right. I mean, the only reason I know this is because I watch one of these shows with a, what is it, like, the professor of medieval warfare,
yeah,
doing these talks on, yeah, how they get TV shows or movies correct. Uh-huh. And this is something that, like, he's said a million times, like, every time that there's this volley fire, he's like, no, not real, no. Huh. Like, eyes roll back into the head, like, oh, I'm so sick of seeing this. That's the only reason I know it.
No, that's really fun, because I didn't know. That's cool. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I just thought it was cool that they show the first volley, because that would make sense. Everybody goes, but then we don't stick around to see Tam being like, okay, and loose.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, do it again. Like, it's
15
more
seconds later. Loose.
Yeah, yeah. Like, loose, or like, reload and loose at your capabilities.
Leisure.
Yeah, like, yeah. In this situation, because, like, I'm just thinking how age ranges might affect what you can and cannot do, or even just, I mean, I know for me, I would struggle regardless of my age, I think. And so I wouldn't be as fast or maybe even as competent as other people around me. And so that would just change. Like, if everyone was waiting for me.
Right.
Tam's over there tapping his toe. Come on, Tracy. Get with it. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. Okay. Huh. I think it would make for a more exciting scene. Like, if it was just like that first one and then, like, off you go as you can.
Yeah. And I think, too, like, we're so used to looking at things through the eyes of, like, movie magic, where it's like, oh, they never tire. They can just shoot round after round perfectly in unison like that. Mm-hmm. For how long?
Right, yeah.
Like, that's not realistic unless we're talking about extremely elves, well-trained soldiers. Oh. That have been trained to do that. You know, like, that's their one thing to do.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, the only time I've ever found it realistic in a way, I guess, is, like, in Lord of the Rings when it's the elves. I'm like, oh, they're elves. Like, of course they can, like,
keep shooting without, yeah, tiring.
Yeah. Oh, so the other thing that I think, okay, so Perrin throws, I mean, are we okay with moving on? Or did we still?
Yeah, yeah, go for
okay,
it.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to say that, like, Perrin just tells the White Cloaks, like, you should just go. Now, just go. Like,
mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want this. It's time for you to leave. And they're like, okay. Off we go. Yeah, so they leave. And as they're like, as the last one of them rides away, this little group of people comes up to Perrin and is like, Lord Perrin. It's their village council from Watch Hill, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. Right. And they're, like, bowing and
Barstir or something.
Yeah, Jarinvar Barstir.
Jur, they call me.
All right, Jur.
Of course they do. Of course they do. But he's like, hey, not to like interrupt you, but we're gonna follow the White Cloaks because we're really tired of them. And we'd like to see them gone.
Yes.
And as long as you're cool with it, that's what we're gonna go do. And Perrin's like, I don't even know who the fuck you are. Sure, all right, whatever, man.
And the women bring him apple tarts.
Right?
So cute.
Like, it's just, it's a good moment where...
I love that the White Cloaks get ushered out, you know? Yeah. Like, you'll be on your way now.
Yeah. And they're like, we're done with you. You remember what you saw here? Guess what we can do now?
Isn't it interesting... like after the haze of battle, like everyone kind of sees clearly now, where it was like, oh, the White Cloaks weren't really protecting us, they were actually awful.
Yeah,
like the blinders have come off, and now everyone is like, had the sense shaking into them. It was almost like they were under an enchantment, if you will.
Ooh, yeah.
And that's gone now.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard to see when there's so much fear and uncertainty around you and you're not quite sure which way things are going to fall.
Yeah, and there's also the question of Ordeath, you know?
Ooh. Like,
we don't know exactly, like, how much his touch on people has spread. So, like, it's always interesting in these chapters where, you know, the White Cloaks are, of course, being awful, but they're also kind of being commanded by Ordeath.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just, like, a rot, you know? He's just, like, I don't know. He's tainting everyone around him is what it feels like.
Yes.
And I know that this is actually, like, the Ordeath, not Ordeath, the... Why do I lose track of all of the names?
Because he has so many. It's more death, right? Is that...
More death.
That's
yeah,
the other
more
one? Death. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Like, we know his origin story was that he pretty much made a whole city disappear due to...
his presence?
His presence, but, like, it's like... What is it? The Jamestown people that just like disappeared. No one has ever been able.
Yeah, yeah. That place where is it Roanoke?
That might be the location.
Yeah,
of it.
It's got like the Croatoa thing on it. Is that the one that you're talking about? Everyone disappeared.
I don't know about that, but just that these settlers were never seen again, and you know we have Mordeath who pretty much made a whole city go mad and turn on one another and just end up missing. So, like, if he's capable of that, then he's surely capable of inflaming some White Cloaks kind of, like, clouding the judgment of these people where they're seeing the White Cloaks as saviors, even though the White Cloaks are doing nothing to help them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Slayer / Lord Luke, who also seems to be, he has some almost mystical like abilities as well. And to everyone's just, they kind of fall all over themselves whenever Lord Luke arrives because he's a dandy, you know?
Ah, Lord Luke.
So we move back to Ordeath and he's, you know, like a mile off looking at Emmons Field, and he's just really upset that everything has gone so terribly, even with Esom playing right into his hand.
Right.
So that's the name that the Trollocs were chanting. He also sees the Red Eagle banner, and he thinks about it being Manetherin's banner, and he's questioning that someone has told them, right? Like, they know the story of Manethrin, mm-hmm. and we do know that someone has been mm-hmm. planting that seed,
mm-hmm.
which would have been the Aes Sedai. And he's kind of like Daffy Ducking it, you know? He's so angry that there's like spit flying out of his mouth. And he's looking for a dagger and it's not there, and he's upset, you know, the White Tower, this and that, and the White Cloaks and Bornhold, and mm-hmm. he'll show them all, and
yeah,
it's pretty much where it ends.
Yeah, he does give like their next destination though,
and he's says, going to Tar Valon.
Yeah, but Camelin first.
Yes.
So like, what is in Camelin that's like more important to him than retrieving this dagger that feels like a lost part of himself? Yeah, and then he laughs like a maniac and they all ride away. Like a bunch of former Dirty Weasel boys. When they're like, was thy dark friend, Dirty Weasel boys now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Should we go to spoilers before we... get a little
bit before we completely run out of time.
Too deep there. If you like what you hear, rate and review us anywhere you listen to the podcast. This helps new listeners find the show.
This podcast is brought to you by you. If you'd like to fund the show and receive cool stuff while doing it, check out The Road to Tar Valon on Patreon. All tiers can join us weekly for live recordings on our Discord server.
Lastly, our Wheel of Time shop has a new web address and international shipping is finally live. Find all the links in our show notes, and thanks for listening and joining us on the road to Tar Valon.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think. So obviously, spoiler time, Isam is Lord Luke. Lord Luke is Isam.
Ooh.
Slayer is Lord Luke. It's a 3-in-1 package.
Another instance of a character having way too many names. Too many names. I mean, one of the things that I was thinking about during the battle for Emmons Field is how these archers, these men from the Two Rivers, are going to play this like really key role from here to the last battle.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
One of my favorite moments with the Fael kidnap plotline is when Perrin teams up with the Shan Chen and they have like this parlay, you know, like they meet.
Yeah.
And they kind of put on a show for the Shan Chen, and Perrin's holding like a branch.
Mm-hmm.
He like holds it up in the air and then arrows are fired, and all of the Shan Chen are like, whoa. Like, where did that come from?
Right.
And Perrin's like, I've got guys, okay? Like, nobody get out of hand here, because we're being watched.
I got guys.
And I got a guy. I got a couple of them. And I love that part.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have really loved to see our Two Rivers folk like actually use longbows in the show, but I understand why they didn't. So
yeah, things might change.
It's possible, yeah, but I just can't. I don't know. It would be hard for them to like be lugging that around for every scene.
Yeah, possibly.
And too, there's the. I would have loved to. If we got moments of them like restringing their bows, because that's something that they had to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
weather and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So correct me if I'm wrong, but is it Valon Lupa time coming up?
You mean in the next book?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, House's next book. Okay, cool. I'm like, it's kind of a goofy storyline, but
I think it's fun.
I like it. It's fun. It's fun. It's just fun.
yeah, we've got all of that coming up with Val and Luca, Massima. Oh God, I forgot about that. That's coming up too. Brigida.
Galad is a white cloak.
Yes.
Yeah. Man, I still am just like, why Gowen? Why?
Yeah, I don't know. I think as far as like the end of this book, I know that obviously Rand's story is really important, but it does feel nice to have some climatic ending that isn't Rand versus a Forsaken.
Right?
It's almost formulaic.
I was going to say, are you saying it's getting old yet by the end of book four? I mean, yeah, at least this time it was a double whammy and like Nynaeve battled a Forsaken and Rand then battles a Forsaken. So,
ooh, right, but I'm just talking about the Battle of Emmons Field being like a reprieve from that. I mean, I think the most compelling villains in the series are not Forsaken. Like, Elaida as a baddie is amazing. Mm-hmm. She's probably my favorite, like, quote-unquote bad guy in the story.
Yeah, same.
But there's a lot of potential, I think, in the TV show with switching that formula up a little bit. Like, we might not have 13 Forsaken.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, fewer. I mean, that would work.
I think it would be okay. It's just a matter of deciding which ones you want to keep and which ones you want to let loose. Because how many times is one of the Forsaken, like, spun into the pattern, you know, like as far as the Forsaken go, I think Morden is the only one that like needs to be spun back out again.
Yeah,
but that might be controversial, so I don't know.
I mean, as far as need, I think you're right. I feel as though a lot of the Forsaken that get spun back out have like these really weak, or at least weekend, plot lines, and sometimes it just feels like, and this happened, like, and Syndane showed up and everyone was like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah, Tatara makes a good point. He says more like Bao should have been in the books. I agree. I think Demandred could have been one of the most interesting Forsaken.
Yeah, for sure.
Out of them all.
Yeah, yeah. That, but, like, little excerpt that, what is it called? I don't even remember.
River of Souls.
Yes.
River of Souls.
Yeah, that had me looking at that guy in a whole different way. Like,
oh, absolutely. It made him way more interesting.
Totally.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. So then when, like, Demandred shows up later, like, in the last battle and has, like, a Sharan army behind him and channelers and stuff, it makes sense. And I'm actually feeling kind of sympathetic and a little supportive of him.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that little novella is worth so much. Mm-hmm. It is worth so much. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, Brandon Sanderson has been a little bit, you know, in contact with Prime Video team Rafe and all. Mm-hmm. So, like, it would be very cool if that was something that he kind of was like, you know, like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Like, how do you feel about doing a little Demandred plot line instead of just this guy magically showing up at the end and people being like, okay,
who, what? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, in the Sharns too, like, you get like these little drops of information about them throughout the series, but you don't ever get information about who they are, what they are, what their hierarchy is. And like, you get so, like, you get all of that in River of Souls. Like, mm-hmm. it's one of those really packed pieces of information, and it's
I don't know. It was absolutely worth reading. And I really, like, I can't say that the Sharon Society is one that should thrive. It seems pretty cruel.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, who knows what choices Demon Dread might make? Like, there were parts of him that felt like he was moving towards, this sounds so goofy, but understanding love.
Yeah, and I think, maybe.
I think that that might be, like, part of the reason why the story feels kind of important is, like...
I mean, I don't know about you, but I think the story is really important, especially for the fact of the Jumara factor. I just want to see a Jumara, let's be honest.
I knew that's what it was. I knew it. I knew it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, like with the TV show, though, we obviously, like, they had a big setback with them having to build the Blight instead of shoot in the location that they wanted to shoot at. But, man, I was really hoping for some Blight creatures. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm alone in this.
Oh, God, no. I mean... What a wasted opportunity. What a wasted opportunity when the Blight is shown in the TV series. You've got some creepy trees. Some guys sprouting mushrooms. Okay.
Well, yeah, it would have been too expensive to get these Blight creatures made, I would assume. I'm agreeing with Hal here. Too expensive because they had to... unexpectedly reshoot many scenes, and then with the pandemic they had to use CGI to pretty much create a whole battle in the last episode, so their CGI budget probably all had to go to that, because with the pandemic they couldn't have more than a few people in the same area, you know, like you couldn't stand by people. So I don't know, I just... Oh, the pandemic, man. I mean, I know a lot of really terrible things happened due to it. I'm not trying to be like, the worst thing that happened is they, you know, it ruined my TV show. But it really, you know, I'm surprised that they were able to do what they did, yeah, considering what all happened.
I mean, we do get like that overrun image of Malkier. And we do get, like, that glimpse of the Trollocs, like, leaving in hordes from the Blight to attack Faldara, and Moraine being like, the best thing we can do is just keep moving forward. And, I mean, that's, I mean, okay. But I wouldn't have minded, like, at least moving trees? Something to show that this was, like, where was it? I think, yeah, High Lord Tatara says, Blight was a joke. Moraine and Rand touching every tree possible. And I was like, yeah, same. That's how I
don't
felt
touch
about
anything.
It. But and let's take a nap. What? Okay. Totally makes sense to me. That's what I was thinking too. But I mean,
don't
know.
That was just... I don't want to bash too much on that.
Right.
Who knows, like, what they had to switch and fix and change for certain things to make sense. Like,
yeah.
Is it possible that there were supposed to be more people in that scene? Is it possible that there was actually supposed to be something else that happened, but it couldn't happen because... Matt's not there, or Lan's there, or we don't know. So
that's a good point. And I mean, there's nothing to say that as the show moves forward and the budget expands, that we won't get a transformed Blight because things are getting worse. And so maybe we'll get something where it's like, well, that first time here in the Blight was a cakewalk, and now this time things are real bad. That could happen.
Yeah.
I'd be okay with that.
I mean,
No blight naps. Like
we have to go back to the blight, you know?
Yeah, like, exactly.
It happens in the book. So yeah. Maybe we get a blight part two, which I would love that.
Yeah. And I think there's like mention at some point of how quiet the blight has been recently at some point. Like, I don't know if it's in this book or the next book, but like at some point when like the nations up towards the blight start like kind of coming together to try to figure out what the fuck is going on, I think it's like they only feel comfortable enough doing that because the blight seems real quiet. So, like, if the blight is quiet enough that Rand and Morian can take naps in it, then, yeah, I'd probably feel okay taking my forces away from it, too. Sure. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense, I guess. I don't know.
I'm trying to think if there was anything, like, spoilery. Okay, so this was something. Varen knows who Isom is, so when... Perrin's like, when the Trollocs are shouting Isom, and Perrin's like, what? And Varen's like, interesting. I'm like, oh, she knows. She knows. She knows.
Yeah, she knows.
She also mentions Perrin's axe, and she's like, when are you going to put it away?
For a hammer.
And choose the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. She obviously... She knows her prophecies very well.
Yeah. And she, like, dark prophecies. Like, that's one of the things that Varen's actually, I mean, it seems as though she's a bit of a specialist in that area, weirdly enough. And isn't there, there's prophecy attached to Isom / Lord Luke / what is his name? Lan's cousin's name.
Isom, Lord Luke, Slayer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting that Varen knows all of this, but she doesn't, like, give anyone a heads up. You know? Like, by the way.
By the way.
But it's Varen, of course. She's not going to show her hand.
Which, yeah, I was just going to say, like, would she be able to? Like, when she makes that statement, how she would attach a string to each one of them, and... She would. And I mean, in some ways, isn't that kind of one of the directives that comes from Baalzamon, is like, if not kill them, keep an eye on them. So would she be fulfilling things? Like,
I don't know. Like, if it is tied to dark prophecy, if it is tied to that and it's dark friend knowledge, then maybe she's not at liberty to talk about it at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe this is something with, like, her dark friend oaths, but...
Yeah.
At the same time, I feel like there's a little bit of wiggle room if she's already, like, saying, like, aren't you gonna switch the axe for the hammer or whatever? And she's already saying, like, Isom, interesting. Like, she's dropping clues, so she can drop clues.
Mm-hmm.
So... She's not forbidden from dropping clues, it seems.
Yeah. And it kind of, like, in some ways, her persona protects her. Like, Browns are known for being a bit eccentric in what they choose to study. And so I think, like, there's that she's sharper than she seems comes up frequently. But then also just the fact that, like, she's Brown Aja. She wants to know. And so it's kind of like, all right, weirdo. You're weird, interesting that they're like shouting something we understand this time.
I love Varen, but sometimes it's like the things that she does and says is just, I feel like it's specifically there just to make you question, is she on the side of the light or mm-hmm. the dark?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where she's like written to fulfill this role, mm-hmm. right? Like mm-hmm. that's her point in the story pretty much. So that you have this big like, oh my gosh moment when mm-hmm. you get the reveal.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that,
mm-hmm.
but it almost makes her a little bit, not as compelling as a character, I guess. Like, it's almost like she doesn't, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it very well. There's something, like, hard about her to like when you see her as just this tool for, like, a wow moment, mm-hmm. and then that's it. She's gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she spoiled that in book two, if you go back and look.
Yeah, isn't that when she, like...
She tells them that Moraine sent her.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have an argument for that.
Yeah.
If you would like to hear it. So I have a theory that she actually didn't lie there, because she is in that scene. I believe it's the chapter previous to that she shows up again. So it's a few chapters back, but she's having this conversation with Moraine and Swan Sanche. They're all in the same room together. And I don't remember if it's Moraine or Swan Sanche, but they're like, we need to do this. We need to find the horn. We need to find the dagger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the plan that is laid. So, like, if someone said, like, we need to do this, then technically she could be like, oh, well, Swan Sanche or Moraine sent me on this mission. So it's like the wording can be Aes Sedai'd, if you will.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
And it's not like a... I mean, she's just that sneaky, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's... And if she believes that... Well, obviously the three O's don't matter to her, but if she's trying to be as sneaky as any Aes Sedai would be, like...
Mm-hmm. She could rationalize her thinking.
Right, right.
And her
Yeah,
wording.
You'd have to go back and look at that chapter. I don't remember what chapter it is. I can send it to you later. But it's definitely worth looking at.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the wording, it tracks.
Yeah. I feel like we might have talked about that at least once before. It just sounds familiar.
I think on the Varen episode we did.
Okay, yeah. More than likely then. Because she's tricky. She's tricky in what she's doing and what she's showing and what she's not. And, I mean, I'm thinking
yes.
about when she goes through the, captured Aes Sedai after the battle at Dumai's Wells. And she uses, like, her really fumbly ability for compulsion on these captured sisters. And it's like, what are you doing? Is this okay because you're on Rand's side? Are you doing something nefarious? Like, what's happening?
I don't know. Perrin. Varen is always tricksy like that.
It's
everything
true.
That she says is almost always worth a second look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I find her so interesting. If she had a spinoff series, I would probably be interested in it.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'd be curious. I mean, what was she looking at that, like, tumbled her into a den of the Black Aja where she becomes Black Aja, you know?
I would have loved to see the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
What was it that pulled her in, I guess.
Yeah, she's exiled from, like, her hometown. Why? What did
right?
you do? What did you do?
It would have been really interesting. Oh, here. I found it.
Her owl flew off with a mouse and she followed it. Is that the hypothesis? Oh,
so here's
look at
the
you.
Quote. Moraine gave the brown sister a wry look. Another danger confronts us, and she sounds as if it is a puzzle in the book. Light, the browns truly are not aware of the world at all. Then we must find the dagger, sister. See? She said, we must find the dagger, sister.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Varen could play that off like, yeah, she sent me to look for the dagger.
Mm-hmm.
We must find the dagger, sister. That's my theory there.
I can absolutely see that.
Is it plausible?
I think
do
so.
We like
I mean, considering the things that we see Aes Sedai capable of doing inside the Three Oaths, I think, yes, absolutely, this is possible.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just as likely that she lied, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you're trying to make the argument with that line that, like, that was, you know, 100% shows that she lied.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't think it's as concrete.
Yeah.
But definitely open to interpretation.
Agreed. Agreed. Enjoyable. I like a good back and forth. Questionable things. I like it. We are,
Tracy,
like, yeah,
should
I just
wrap
looked.
It up?
We have to.
Okay.
We have
Thanks
to.
Everybody for joining us
Thank
today.
You.
And
always so fun.
We will see you next week as we finish The Shadow Rising.
Oh my gosh. Hooray!
Thanks so much for joining us. We will continue to release new episodes every Wednesday. We would love if you would subscribe to the podcast, leave us reviews, and share us with your friends in the Wheel of Time community.
Let us know what you thought of our content. Correct us. Send us things we may have missed. You can find links to our email and social media accounts in the show notes. And if you have the Anchor app, leave a voice message for us to play in upcoming episodes.
We also have a website where you can find links to our Discord channel, social media platforms, and merch shop.
So until next week,
thanks for joining us on the road to Tarvalen.